20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail, morgan-outdoors.com.
On last week's Wait, Wait, actor John Cusack told us about his latest project.
So right. I think French Connection meets E.T.,
right.
meets My Dinner with Andre, meets Smokey and the Bandit,
yeah.
meets The Mike Douglas Show.
Right.
Another of those?
Yes.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us this week for a genre-breaking, expectation-shattering news quiz that's somehow just more of the same. With special guest Asif Manvi. That's Wait, Wait from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
On This Old House Radio Hour, the truth about luxury paint.
Not everything that comes across my lab passes testing. Quite a few fail and have to be reformulated by the manufacturer so that they can try again.
Plus, CNN anchor Jake Tapper's Lake House is the antidote to the chaos of Washington, D.C. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Donald Trump's threats against Cuba and the desperate situation of Cuba's people.
On the one hand, the Cubans are looking it around and they're thinking, the Americans are in this quagmire. This benefits us. On the other hand, they're thinking, we've got to get some energy supplies. So they're going to go into this like a canny poker player.
Reporter John Lee Anderson, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. My guest today is Stuart Zagnit, a working actor since he graduated from Montclair State College in New Jersey in 1974. But he does have a Catskill connection, having worked with a three-man comedy crew at Grossinger's. And that crew also worked at the Improv in New York City at the time when comics like Jerry Seinfeld, Richard Lewis, Larry David, and Andy Kaufman were coming up. He's appeared at the Kennedy Center, was in the national touring company of shows like Into the Woods and Wicked, and has appeared on Broadway in Caroline or Change, Newsies, Seussical the Musical, to name just a few. He's been in many off-Broadway productions and has done film, commercials, and voice actor work. There's just so much I can't list everything. Today, Stuart is going to share stories from his over 50-year career, and although he's not a household name, he is a shining example of what it means to be a successful working actor, and what's possible if you believe in yourself and your ability to make your dreams come true. Here's my conversation with Stuart Zagnit. Stuart, thank you so much for joining me today on Catskill Character. And let me apologize first for not being able to mention every single one of your huge accomplishments. The list is too long. What can I say? I'm so sorry.
Well, it's really a delight to be able to spend some time and speak with you and catch up.
Yes, absolutely. So, Stuart, when did you first realize you wanted to be an actor?
It was really very early in my life. I was drawn to performing. I think it was a kind of approval thing. I learned early on that I could make people laugh. And whenever there was a little tension in the house, that was the way to break the tension. And so watching the Three Stooges and Jerry Lewis and Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy, I went, wow, these people are so funny. So I was drawn to that from the very beginning, and every time there was an opportunity to perform, whether it was an assembly at school, I remember getting cast in the Purim play at Sunday school, and I played Haman, and they hung me, and that was it. I was set. I said, you know, playing the villain, that's the best thing in the world. And from that time on, I was in school shows, holiday shows, high school. We had a drama club in high school, so I ended up being the president of the high school drama club, and then I went to college, and they had a wonderful players organization there and a speech theater department. It seemed just predestined that that was going to be my future, which was odd because my parents ran a grocery store. There wasn't a single person in any of the arts that I could tell, and here I was getting up on stage and entertaining.
That is odd, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. The kind of thing when you know who you are, you know who you are.
Yeah. And
mercifully, I think my mother saw that. I think she saw that and said, You know, there's something, it's like a light goes on when he's entertaining.
Yeah.
And if we had family gatherings, there was a parody song that I wound up writing. An old song was Who Threw the Overalls in Mrs. Murphy's Chowder? That was a kind of a folky character song. Well, I wrote, Who Threw the Dungarees in Mrs. Agnet's Kreplach? And and I had all the lyrics changed to fit our family. So when the family got together, my mother would say, sing that song, do that song. And I would. I didn't need much coaxing. And I loved the reaction. So it just seemed like this is where I needed to be.
Well, you know, speaking of your mother, she really was your advocate. And she encouraged you to pursue all of your dreams. But sadly, and it's just so awful, that both of your parents died before you even finished your first semester of college. But fortunately, you told me that being in the theater department at Montclair State College saved your life, giving you a home and a community. I mean, such a beautiful thing out of so much tragedy.
It's really true. I was a senior in high school. I was ready to graduate. My parents came to class night where I got to perform. I did a comedy routine that I borrowed from David Steinberg. My memory is of my parents sitting in the bleachers watching me do that. And I'm seeing a smile on my dad's face. I don't know if it really happened. I think it did. I wanted it to happen. And by the summer of that same year after graduating, in the second week in August, my father passed away. Very unexpectedly, because he was the strong one. And my mother dropped me off at college, maybe like 3 weeks later. And she did get to see my first performance in a main stage college play. It was a very rarely produced Tennessee Williams play called Camino Real. And she saw that. The next weekend was Thanksgiving. So I was coming home for Thanksgiving weekend. And my mother passed away Thanksgiving night. Mm. And that was it. And then I didn't have parents anymore. So after the week of mourning, I went back to college and my life was very different. And I keep saying, thank goodness I had the theater department, the friends I was making there. Because it gave me stability. It gave me something to focus my life into. And I did. I did it ferociously. And by senior year, I was doing a show a month. It was exciting, including a show we did that one of our professors had written, an adaptation of Machiavelli's Mandragola called The Mandrake. And we entered it in the American College Theater Festival. And it was chosen as one of the 10 best college productions in America. And our prize was to get to go to the Kennedy Center and perform it. So yes. Here I was, a college senior, on performing this on the stage at the Kennedy Center. Years later, when I came back to the Kennedy Center with the touring company of Into the Woods, I could say, oh, I've been there before.
I've been here before. So I'm going to jump around here, Stuart, but sure. Since this is Catskill Character, would you tell us a little bit about your comedy team? The Zaniacs. You guys played Grossinger's probably not too long before it closed, right?
Yeah, I took a slight pause in my theater career. There was this three-person comedy act that was looking for a new person to join them. They had lost a member of the company. At the time, they were called Zaniac. And so I auditioned and they cast me. And we would do the comedy clubs in New York. We played the improv, the famous improv. And when Andy Kaufman was performing and Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David and Richard Lewis, we were in the mix there doing our shows, usually very late at night or early in the morning. And we got a manager, and the manager got us a mini tour where we opened for a rock band named Rosie. And then one of the gigs was playing up at Grossinger's in the Catskills, kind of very much at the end of that Catskills era when all those big hotels were being torn down. So I can say I've done a little bit of the Catskill circuit as well as the comedy clubs in New York. We changed our name to Three's Company before there was a TV show called Three's Company. And then I think after a couple years of that, I said, I think it's time to go back into legitimate theater again and resume my career, which I did.
In 1987, you were in the national touring company of Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods. And there's a great story there, if you could tell us that.
Yes. The show had already been on the road for 6 months, and they needed a character actor to cover the lead role of the baker, to also cover the Cinderella's father and the mysterious man. And he would be on stage as the Princess Stewart. So it was kind of a very small but funny little character part, and be ready to go on for the baker. So this tour had a really great policy, which is if you wanted to perform one of the roles that you covered, you would go to the person who normally did the role and ask them, would you be okay if I did this performance on this date? If they said yes, you got to do it. They got the day off. There wasn't any change in the money, but you also got the credit saying you performed it. So the tour had a long sit down, I think 4 weeks at the Kennedy Center, which was a lot. I had relatives in Maryland who would love to come see me. So I asked for the last Saturday matinee of the run, because that way they could come see me. I could go out to dinner, be really nice. The person who was doing it said, sure, I'll go take the day off, go to the movies, it'll be great. So it was all set. And I worked and I worked and I worked. Besides regular rehearsals, I was drilling all the stuff. I get to the theater at the Kennedy Center that morning. I'm so excited. They haven't even opened up the building. So I'm sitting in the parking lot waiting to go in. Finally, a stagehand opens the door. I go in. I'm going through all my props. I'm checking everything out. The show starts and everything just starts to fall into place. The momentary like blindness of, oh my God, I'm on the Kennedy Center stage and I'm actually doing this. It subsides and I'm just into the show and it's just going like clockwork. I'm so excited. It's a really good show. The curtain comes down and our stage manager walks out from the wings with a big smile on his face. And he says, somebody wants to say hello to you all. And he walks Stephen Sondheim onto the stage. Now, Stephen Sondheim, being the composer of the piece and the lyricist, he had regular house seats, which he would give to family, friends, colleagues. And it took the stage manager half of the first act to realize that it was Sondheim sitting in his seats. But he had the good sense not to tell anybody. And if I had known all the pressure I was on already about doing this role for the first time, I don't think I would have gotten through it. Mm. Anyway, one of the stepsisters turned to me after the stage manager introduced him and said, you are the luckiest son of a I've ever met. And indeed I was. And Mr. Sondheim stayed afterwards, gave the company notes. He came over to me and gave me notes as if I did that role every night. Mm. And it was very constructive, very helpful. And I couldn't believe I was getting notes from Sondheim himself. And so then the note session was over and I had to join my relatives who were waiting for me at a restaurant. And I don't remember my feet touching the ground. I think I just floated from the Kennedy Center over to the restaurant. I was on such a high. And that is one of those happy accidents that I will never forget.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What a story. You know, we're running out of time, but I want to just get this in really quickly, that you were the last Seymour in the original production of Little Shop of Horrors that was at the Orpheum. You also played the suitor of Zeidel, the eldest daughter, and Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting about that is that many years later, both of those shows, you went back. You didn't play Seymour. You played Mr.
Mushkin.
Yeah, Mushkin.
Was the owner of the flower shop, yes.
And then when you went back, you also played in Fiddler on the Roof, but you didn't play this young suitor. You played Tevye.
The star of the show.
Star of the show. And I mean, that is like a full circle moment, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Seymour was probably one of the, I mean, that's an iconic part. So much fun. And I have to say, I brought my son to see you playing Seymour. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Throughout the years, you know, Stuart, it's always been so much fun to watch TV. And all of a sudden, I'm watching Law and Order and you pop up on the screen, or 30 Rock, The Good Wife. I mean, so many shows. Even You've been on the marvelous Mrs. Maisel in one of the best scenes in that whole show. But you also appeared in commercials. And if you could do it really, really quickly, mm-hmm. I'd love for you to tell the listener the story about the Trident gum commercial.
Yeah, there was a series of a new campaign, and it was 4 out of 5 dentists recommend Trident. What's with the fifth dentist? And I think the first commercial that ever aired was a squirrel that crawled in through the window and bit one of the dentists, and that's why he didn't vote yes. And mine was called The Fly. And we're all voting, and a fly comes into the studio and landed on the forehead of dentist number 5. Well, I'm watching The Fly. I'm dentist number 4, and I just forget where I am, and I pick up my clipboard and I whack dentist number 5 in the forehead to kill the fly. And he falls over and hits the no button. And then, of course, I look very embarrassed about what did I just do. And that was a demo commercial. It was such a hit. It ran for like over 2 years. And it was kind of amazing because commercial money is very good. And they even gave us a guarantee the second time they ran it. So it was like every cycle, it was Christmas. It was just really...
It's a beautiful thing.
Really wonderful thing. And I learned how people can do very well making television commercials. And I wish I was doing them now.
Don't we all? Let's take a quick break here, Stuart, and we'll come right back. This is Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg. My guest today is Stuart Zagnik. We'll be right back.
So here's the deal. Public radio is now operating without federal funding, and your support matters more than ever. One way to help is to donate that car, truck, or old motorcycle in your driveway. You clear out some space and help keep trusted news coverage alive in your community. The process? Simple. Free, even tax deductible. Just head to this station's website and help us keep this work going together.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at wjffradio.org.
This week on Cat's Cast, rediscovering Mary Margaret McBride, the First Lady of Radio, who made her home right here in the Catskills.
She was a superb journalist and a superb radio interviewer. She's taking women seriously at a time when American culture did not always take women seriously, and people designed their days around listening to Mary Margaret.
Saturday at 11 a.m. right here on Radio Catskill.
If this goes on, what I anticipate are spectacularly high prices at the pump.
On this week's On the Media, a primer on what the Trump administration's war with Iran means for big oil and for us.
This is a bigger shock than the 1970s were. It could get really bad.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC. This afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is actor Stuart Zagnik. In the first half of the show, Stuart told us about the emergence of his desire to entertain people at a very young age, and we learned about the importance of his college years at Montclair State College, and he regaled us with stories from his over 50-year career as an actor of stage, film, and TV. In the next half of the show, we're going to hear how Stuart became a very successful voice actor. Here we go. Okay, so Stuart, when we spoke earlier, you quoted someone as saying, "Our lives and our work lives are influenced by happy accidents." Okay. This would be a good time to share the story of the happy accident that happened in your career and has provided steady work for you since the 90s.
Yes, indeed. I had always been a freelance voice actor and would do, you know, little tags for commercials. The first one was an Acme supermarket commercial, and it had so many different tags for different regional areas. I couldn't believe when I first got the paycheck. I said, wow, you can actually make a living doing this. But it had been a while since I'd really had a good voiceover job. And one day, a friend of mine who had been a recovering actor, who saw the light and went into law school and became a very successful lawyer. He was
my an entertainment lawyer?
No. No, he, I think he was and has done very, very well. And he said to me one day, we were standing around talking in Brooklyn, and he said, you know, a buddy of mine is doing this new, he used the word animated because the word anime wasn't really used in our country at that time. This is 1998. He says he's looking for character voices. You should give him a call. Tell him you know me, and they'll set up an audition for you. So I said, great. That's, you know, what any opportunity. So I called them. They set up an audition for me. They showed me pictures of like five different characters. One of them was kind of an eccentric professor in a white lab coat. And I said, okay. So I read the copy they gave me. This was an English translation because the show was very popular in Japan. And it was coming to the United States. And a couple weeks later, they offered it to me. And I wound up doing the voice of Professor Oak in Pokemon. Pokemon is kind of the king of all anime shows, probably around the world. And it's about to celebrate its 30th anniversary. So here I was doing this unknown show. And it was fun to do the recordings. But I thought maybe I'll get maybe 6 months or a year worth of work. Well, I did the voice for the first 10 years of the show. And a lot of people grew up listening to our show. And it turns out now that the world of anime conventions has gotten very big and very popular. And now I'm a very popular guest coming to these things, and I meet my fans, and I do signings and photo ops, and I sign those Pokemon cards, which are very, very popular and in demand, and then the value of them goes up. So it's been an amazing job I never thought I would have, with a fan base that surpasses anything I've done in theater or probably even television. Television, you know, has a big audience, but the anime world is huge.
Yeah.
And I, a couple weeks ago, I was signing in Texas. The week after that, I was in the UK. So I'm all over the place doing these things. And it's a great side business to my theater career and my Fantastic. Television and another career. So, and it just shows if I stay healthy, I'll have a lot more opportunities to meet more fans, and it's ongoing. So a lot of gratitude to the universe for that.
I have a quick question. So you were in Texas, the next weekend you were in London. Are the conventions different, like from Texas to London? Do they have a different flavor or different feeling?
Yeah, I think the promoters vary depending on in every city and in every country. They have their own personality. The consistency is us, because the fans relate to us equally all over the world. And, you know, I'm starting to branch out into foreign countries. I'd like to do more. I'd like to go to places I'd like to visit, like Paris. If you're listening, I'd love to do one there. Maybe Italy, the UK. I've done three already in the UK, Manchester, Birmingham, and Kent. And of London, if you're listening, I want to do one downtown London, would be great. But they seem to be something that's for the current and future, I think they're going to be happening. So, and I also made my first appearance at New York Comic Con this past year with a live show that was a parody spoof of Pokemon.
Oh, yes, Balls. I wanted to ask you about that.
These very talented young men, Harrison Bryan and Brandon Zellman, wrote this wonderful send-up of the whole anime universe. And everybody knows what they're referring to, but we don't use any references that would literally say that that's it. Everybody knows who it is. And I'm playing the professor. I'm putting that in quotes. So, and they know who the professor is. And the people in anime world didn't know that I did musical theater. And the musical theater people didn't know I was an anime. So it sort of combines my two worlds. I get to sing. I get to do funny scenes. And it's a hilarious, absurd, outrageous show. And we've been doing it more to the late night crowd. It's almost like a cabaret type thing. But we're looking for more venues to do during the course of 2026 and beyond. So Balls fans, keep watching, because I'll probably be turning up in that too in the near future.
I have to ask you this, Stuart. Why is it called Balls?
Well, because the Pokemon characters, people know Pikachu, they are contained in a Pokeball, which is a red and white ball. And literally the creatures,
when
you open them up, they come out and then they do battle. And when the battles are over, they go back in the ball. So it's a reference to literally the ball. And we have our own version, which are, they are collect-a-buddies. So we don't have to use another word that might be questionable.
People might get the wrong idea.
Yeah, so they're collect-a-balls and collect-a-buddies. So it just parodies something that's part of that world. So,
okay, thank you for that.
Sure.
Do you have a bucket list, Stuart? Any role that you'd like to reprise, or a role that you've never played? What?
Now that I'm getting older, and I have to admit that I'm definitely in that senior category. There's older characters. If I really wanted to stretch, I would go, well, maybe King Lear is in my wheelhouse now, which would be interesting. There was a workshop through, I think it was NYU, and a musical theater person wrote a 10-minute musical version as if musicalized Death of a Salesman. So I sang Willie Loman. This is many years ago when I was way too young for it, but I'd love to do that character, whether it's musical or not. I think I would love to take on a role like that at this point. When I was 17 years old, I was doing Grandpa Vanderhoff in the Kaufman and Hart play, You Can't Take It With You. And so I was very good at old man makeup. Now I don't have to do the makeup anymore.
You can get out there a lot faster. You don't have to go to the makeup room.
Yeah. Maybe they could do a musical version of The Real McCoys, because I remember watching Walter Brennan going, Luke, Devon, Luke, hey.
Well, Stuart, oh my God, this has been so much fun. And, here's to many more years of joyful work for you. You are so exuberant about your work, and it's so refreshing to see someone who loves what they do and has been doing it for so long and still just has a passion. And it's just a wonderful treat for me.
Well, thank you. I think a profession like this keeps anybody young. You have to sort of a young outlook. And fortunately, I'm trying to stay really healthy. And long as I get out of bed in the morning, I'm going to look for my next job.
All right, Stuart. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
It was a real pleasure, and it's really nice to talk to you, as always.
You've been listening to Catskill Character with me, Donna Fillenberg, and my guest, actor Stuart Zagnit. Stuart doesn't have a website. Just Google him. He's all over the place. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month, when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs in the 10:30 time slot. Be sure to tune in then for more fantastic stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fillenberg. This is Radio Catskill.
The Center for Discovery is home to New York State's first children's specialty hospital of its kind. Introducing a new, fully integrated model of care for children ages 5 to 21 with developmental disabilities. By combining medical, behavioral, and therapeutic expertise under one roof, we're improving outcomes and strengthening families across the state. More information at thecenterfordiscovery.org. Paid for by the Center for Discovery.
I'm Sabrina Artel. Join me for conversations with all kinds of people in the studio, on the street, and the kitchen table of my vintage travel trailer. That's Trailer Talk, Monday night at 7:30 on Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.